So good afternoon and welcome to the lecture that talks about how the vowels are supposed to be thought of in the current circumstances, in the current parlance of theoretical understanding. Now, when we talk about vowels, we describe them as vocalic sounds. So, what are vocalic sounds? What we commonly think of as vowel sounds, they are better described when we consider their articulation as vocalic sounds. It is convenient to use the term vowel, but for technical definitions and some theoretical purposes, it is necessary to distinguish between vowels and vocalic sounds. Sorry. As we shall see in a later part of the lecture, the reason why vocalic sounds are to be understood as separate from the vowels is because the vocalic sounds are produced by the pulmonary aggressive airstream through the vibration or the constriction of the vocal folds in the larynx and the air rushing out through the vocal tract. And the sound generated at the larynx is modified by the cavities of the tract. That means that the size and shape of this tract can be varied. And principally by positioning the tongue and the lips and moving these positions of these articulators in both space and time, that is changing the configuration so that there is a perceived phonetic quality of the vocalic sound is altered. Now, how do we look at it from the theoretical point? We have already seen that there is a theory called the source filter theory, which is one of the most common theories used to explain the vocalic sounds. In that, you will see that there is a source, the laryngeal source, that produces the sound, that is the source of the sound itself, and therefore, when it passes on the supraglottal side and comes into the vocal tract, it gets modified, it gets filtered by the configuration of the vocal tract. So, therefore, the two most fundamental articulatory movements that produce these vocalic sounds are the shape and position of the tongue. And the shape and degree of extension and protrusion of the lips. It is the tongue that is mainly determining the geometry of the oral and pharyngeal cavities, and the lips control the shape and area in front of the vocal tract, just in front of the lips. The lip extensions or protrusions also produce some kind of extending the overall length of the vocal tract, which is rarely accounted for in introductory courses, but you should know that they are useful sometimes in making distinctions between many different sounds. Now, the major problem in describing the articulation of vocalic sounds is to define the position of the tongue. So we have the method of configuration to tell you what the position of the tongue is. Now the tongue moves with within the vocal cavity without making any significant contributions to narrowing of the area which is surrounding the midline of the oral cavity, the middle points, middle part of the oral cavity. So that is taken to be a neutral position. As a result, we cannot locate a specific point of constriction or blockage, and this the experts have tended to call as a neutral position of the tongue from which other positions are compared. So traditionally, we look at vowels and conceptually they are plotted on a two-dimensional diagram. In the diagram, there is a representation of the articulatory space. The vertical axis represents tongue height, and the horizontal axis represents the tongue fronting, that is, how far backwards or how far forward the tongue has been moved. So either the backness or retraction or the fronting or the protrusion, not of the lips but of the tongue itself, extension of the tongue forwards towards the lips. There is no clear-cut landmark over here on the tongue to serve as a position of reference, point of reference for this mapping. So what the initial phoneticians did was to engage in a procedure that tries to locate the highest point on the surface of the tongue. The height and fronting of this point are then plotted with respect to some of the external reference points such as the atlas vertebra. The atlas vertebra is one of the bones of your backbone. So that is a standard point of reference with which comparisons are made to the location. So in the diagram that you have drawn, the mid-sagittal section of the head where the different parts of the vocal cavity and the nasal cavity and the backbone and the pharyngeal and laryngeal sections are shown, we see that the height and fronting of this point are found relative to these particular locations. Now, additional points of reference are the points or the places of articulation. So we know roughly where the lips will be there, where the tip of the tongue will be touching the upper teeth, where exactly is the alveolus, where the hard palate and soft palate are distinguished, and where the velum ends, where the uvula is located, where the pharyngeal wall is located, the back wall of the pharynx, or where the larynx and the glottal plane are located. So we know roughly that these are the points. So taking them as reference points, a two-dimensional figure is drawn. So what is this two-dimensional figure? It is like a graph. You have a plain sheet of paper which is two-dimensional. It has lengthwise and heightwise, breadthwise. So you have two dimensions, and each of these dimensions refer to, as I indicated a couple of minutes back, the horizontal dimension refers to the frontness or the backness of the tongue, and the vertical dimension refers to the height that is achieved by the tongue surface, the uppermost part of the tongue surface, what height it achieves. whether it is the front part of the tongue or the back part of the tongue, sorry, of the tongue, back part of the tongue is there, that is immaterial. We need to locate the highest point on the surface of the tongue, or what is known as the dorsum of the tongue. Now, several researchers have taken the X-ray photographs of the lateral view, like Bernard and Lindau. So in the 70s and 80s, they did these studies and described these measurements in detail. And they have come to the conclusion that these methods are assumed to give a measure of vocalic articulation. Vocalic articulation, that is referring to the vowels, strictly the vowels. However, it is important to note that pictures of every vowel in every language or dialect would be almost similar to be in the description or in their configurations. Sometimes a bit of a difference might be there, but more or less their configurations can give rise to a common description of the locations, the positions. So these descriptions, the articulatory descriptions, they are language independent. The features or the variables they use, they are language independent. The values they take, specific values will be for specific sets of vowels in a specific language. So we can use some of this analysis and extend it to the acoustic analysis of the sound. And we will see later, in a later lecture, how the acoustic space correlates with the articulatory space. So there are parallelisms, there are mappings from the acoustic space to, or rather from the articulatory space to the acoustic space. And that is an important way of understanding the conversion of articulatory parameters into acoustic parameters. Parameters are usually referred to as characteristics that take multiple values. If you change the values, the parameter does not change, the parameter changes values, and the result is a differing configuration. And therefore, when there is a different configuration, it gives rise to different acoustic outputs. So these different acoustic outputs are in the acoustic space, which is mapped onto the previous space, the articulatory space. So there is a kind of a almost one-to-one mapping between the two.